Okay, now we go. Right. First, an update about the project. So maybe you have followed the last development in France. So universities won't open by the end of the semester. So there's no chance that you will be able to work in groups. So I will update the modalities for the project, for the end of the project. You will have to work on your own, unfortunately. And there won't be differences. Maybe we could organize differences online. I'm not sure about that because all of you don't have a good access to internet. So I'm not sure about that. I think I will have to think about it and discuss with the other teachers. Yes, I know some of you can still work on groups, but not all of you, because some are not connected to other people. So to form groups, it won't be not fair to have people working on groups, another not working on group. So except if everybody can find someone to work with, but I'm not sure it's possible. I will discuss with the other teachers to ask them how they do that, and we'll probably have something common with the other teachers. So I will let you update it for the okay. I will solve this problem offline, right? Right now, I haven't decided yet. So modalities are still to be announced. You can start work on your side, on your visualization. You can expect to have some instead of a defense, there will probably be a very short report, and mostly you will have to give them your visualization in hopefully in a standalone version so that I can run it on my computer, but if it's not possible, maybe videos, we'll see, right? No. The question is the deadline for December or January? I can start a poll for this one. In previous years, we did the differences after the break, so in January. But people are not, it depends. Some of you are okay with that, but working during the holidays is not that a good idea, since you will have also the exams. I will start a poll for this one, and depending on the outcome of the poll, we'll see. But still, I will decide. Okay. Okay.
Professor, I have a question about the coding of the visualizations. It's also because in the text you wrote, you can draw your visualization, not thinking on the implementation. So I really did some very hard the visualizations because I was not thinking on implement after. So how it works now?
So then the that was expected. So you are not supposed to be able to implement everything you have designed, but the idea that you do what you can. So at least the visual part. I know the interaction is something difficult. So if you have some complex interaction in mind, that's okay if you don't implement it. But you can implement some basic visualization and explain why you couldn't implement what you had in mind. Then that's okay. Okay, I will give precise instruction for that. Okay. So be patient. I will prepare that during the weekend, and you will have precise instruction for it. There is a question about feedback about the design phase. Yes, sure. So I'm working on it. I got your emails. So I'm working on them to give you feedback on your propositions, right? So again, be a bit patient so you can work on other project for this week. I know you have I guess you have a lot to do. So for this week, just stay on hold on this project. And then I will give you feedback on these steps, on the second step, so on the design. Then you can walk back on that the week after. Okay.
Thanks. My question was just to know if we will expect them at all or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks.
Right. So that's it for the project. I will see for groups. I understand that some of you would like to work in groups. And I think it's a good thing if you can. So there is a Discord server that you use on your side?
Yes.
Okay, because I've only access to the Mattermost server on there. It's not really used.
Yep.
But if you have another way to...
But I'm not sure it's for... Sorry, Professor, but I'm not sure it's for everybody.
No, that's okay. But I just wanted to be sure that you have a way to communicate between yourselves. So if that's the case...
No, but that's what I mean. Not all the students, they use. But for example, we in the AEW we have, but there are people from another courses. So I'm not sure if all students assess, like I don't assess a lot. So I think this is not for everybody.
It's an unofficial server that basically...
Okay. Who is running the server?
Me and some other people.
Okay. And would that be a problem to have other people from the lecture invited?
No.
In
we
this
try
server?
To publicize the link to any student.
Okay. Okay. We'll see that a bit later. And so I didn't get who is admin for the server, but can you contact me by mail so that I can discuss with you?
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, Hadi. Thanks. Okay, so that's it for the project. Last week, I told you to have a look at the exam from last year, and the question was. To have a look at this question. So the question is, give the visual mapping for this chart using cardinal taxonomy. So that's just the table. Taxonomy is just a word to tell, okay, draw the tables with the attributes and the visual variables, and explain why this encoding is good, bad, according to Bertin's criterions, right? So I will switch to this one. Here, I will switch off my camera. Okay, so you can see me there. Did you have a look at this visualization? I hope so. If you compare this one to other visualization we have previously seen, we have something in polar coordinates, right? So we don't have an horizontal or vertical and vertical axis. So we have to retrofit that into CARD taxonomy, and my proposition was to use instead of x and y coordinates to use the polar coordinates. So we will have rho for an angle and theta for rho for the modulus and theta for the angle. And then we have to list the attributes. So what do we have as attributes? It's quite simple, in fact, in the data set. So what the chart is displaying, if you look at the, I think I gave the caption, it shows the average number of babies born every minute of the day in the US, right? So on the circle there, we have the time of the day from midnight to midnight. So that's 24 hours. It's not a regular clock, right? We have 24 hours. And even there is a gap in between. Not sure we have to... we have to consider that. And then, so we have the time over this the angle there, and we have something that's like a curve, but more than an area filled with color, which depicts the number of babies born at this time of the day, right? And the legend there tells you that the average is shown in yellow. And then if you are more than the average, then you will have shades of, let's say, red. And less than the average, you have shades of blue. Okay. So what do we have to consider? Obviously, we have to consider time. Right, as an attribute. And then we have the number of babies per minute. Okay. At a different time of the day. If you look carefully at the graph, in fact, you also have dots. It's not clear what the dots are. And after investigation, so people during the exam didn't add this information, but so if you consider only the line, that's okay. But in fact, you have dots, and it seems that the dots are the actual values for every minute. I'm not sure if it's real data or if it's added on the graph. So if you If you zoom on the graph, you will see that so there are dots there. Not sure if it's the real data or if it's some kind of random noise added to show that there are variations. So I haven't been able to go back to the source of the data. So not sure about that. I'm quite skeptical that's actual data because of there. It looks quite weird to me, but let's say that's real data, right? Then we not only have the number of babies. So if we look at only the dots, we have for the time. The time is mapped onto the angle, so that the time is quantitative. Number of babies per minute is quantitative. And so the time is mapped onto the angle, and the number of babies is mapped onto the distance to the center, right? And we have dots, so we can add points there. So with this mapping, we only have this part of the chart. So we have the polar coordinates, and we only have the part where with dots. Okay, that this part of the graph, right? And then we can consider we have another. So we have two graphs superimposed. Okay, that's a way to see it. And on the other graph, we also have the time. And then the data is not really the babies per minute, but some smoothed version of that. I will note that with brackets like that. So that's an estimation of the number. Okay. So obviously nobody for the exam you weren't expected to go as deep as this analysis. So most of the people just told that it was an area there, and that was perfectly fine to answer that. But I'm trying there to go deeper into the analysis of this chart, right? And again, the taxonomy by Card and McKinley, so this table basically, cannot capture everything. So you have to add some variation on that, and to take some freedom with the framework proposed by Card and McKinley to actually be as precise as possible. So in this second part of the chart, time is still mapped onto the axis there, the angle, and the number of babies is also mapped. So that's the same combinations. Now we don't have points. We don't have, it's not really a line because the area is filled. So that's really an area if you look at the description by Card and McKinley. Oh, there was a question about the visual mapping for the table. Could you repeat? Okay, so there are two more columns. You're right on that. So in the actual version by Card and McKinley, you have a D column, then you have an F column, and then a D star column. And it has two purposes. So this column there has two purposes. And we could use this one. That's that good that you mentioned that. So one of the use for that is to capture when you have a transformation applied to the data. So for example, there you could say that we have the number of babies, okay, which is quantitative, and then there is some smoothing, let's note that with the bracket operators, that transform the number of babies into another quantity, right? So instead of pretending there is another attribute in the data where the data is smoothed, okay, so that's what I did in my version there of the table, you could use those columns to denote that, okay, we still have that's the same attribute, but with a transformation that is noted in the column there, and this transformation is the smoothing, okay? And we precise in the second column the type after the transformation. And why that? Because usually you have transformation there that can do some kind of bucketing or some kind of classification. So you could, so that's another example not related to the visualization there, but you could use a transformation to also transform the data type. So for example, let's say we have a mark in the French system that goes from 0 to 20, so that's something quantitative, and we can do some discretization, so we have to find a name for that. So that's an histogram, right? And then if you do some discretization of your interval, you won't have something quantitative, but after the transformation, you will have something ordered, right? So the data type can change in this transformation. So that's one use for this, the two columns. And so in this case, that depicts data transformation. So we have some new attributes that are computed from the actual data. And there is another use for that. And you have example in the paper by Cardon McKinley for that. You can also denote interaction. So for example, let's say we have something nominal, a name or something, a continent or country. And then there are some operators there. So
I think it's because the bar is above.
Kind of interaction you make to do some selection. So that's data selection, so or filtering using interaction. So you are not transforming the data, so you don't transform for each item, you don't compute another value, but you do selection. So some of the items are kept and some other items are not kept. And you do that using interaction. So somewhere in your interface, you have some interactors, some widgets that you can use to act upon the selection of the data. So you can, so remember, for example, the Gapminder visualization, which is interactive, the interactive version, you have tick marks that you can check or uncheck, and then it will select the countries, for example. So that's an interaction that you can make to have a subset of your data set depending on the value of that specific attribute. Okay, so that the two use for those columns. So you're right, we could have used those columns to for the for the smoothing of the baby's attribute, right? And in this case, that would look like we could use this version there in red instead of this one.
Excuse me? But in this version,
The taxonomy by card is not something that that formal. So you can do as you wish, as long as you find a way to explain how you. Someone is trying to talk. I've got a comment in the. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, but can you hear
someone
us?
Someone is trying to speak, but I can't hear. Is that it?
Yeah, I don't think you can hear.
I can hear you. Someone speaking.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was thinking if in this case that we use the transformation to represent the above case, we wouldn't be able to make the distinction between the point representation and the area representation, right?
Still, you would have to have the different lines in the table. So this part capture the point there. And this part with an A captures the area, right? So you still have to, since there are two visualizations that are superimposed, you would still have to have both parts in your table.
So depicting the transformation would be kind of redundant, or no?
No, I mean you. This part in red, you can use it instead of this part there in red. Right?
Okay, but the transformation is already implicit by the fact that we repeat the line babies, like using
because,
one.
Because, for example, the line with the time, you have to put it twice. Because the time is used in both with the point and with the area, and still at the same time without transformation. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just to show that it is used two times.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Someone else was trying to speak? Okay. If I don't answer, you can still write down your question in the chat, right? Then that's not enough. What we haven't captured in the table, the fact that the area is filled with color, right? And then again, it's a bit tricky to encode that. So remember we have more columns, and there is one for the color, not only for the color, but which is called R for retinal properties. Oh, that's in red. So are there still problems with the sound? I see messages in the chat telling that I can't hear you. We are speaking. Okay. Can you hear me? Yes. Okay. Okay. Right. So for the retinal property, the short answer is to say that the number of babies per minute is also used to encode is also encoded using color, right? It doesn't capture the shade of color there, and there's no easy way to do that, right? So you could reuse what we have done with the horizon graph. So consider that if you have a closer look, that's not a shading of color. You have stripes of a solid color, right? So you could consider that there is some computing involved with the number of babies. And then depending on the number of babies, not only the color is changed, but also the value. Is it dark or it's not exactly the value, because that's in fact a gradient from yellow to red and a gradient from yellow to blue. So I have no good way to encode that with the table. Right. Okay. So I think that's the best we can do right now. Okay. For those who prepared this exercise, do you have any other suggestion or questions about that? No, that's okay. Yeah, I'm just closing the poll for when the defense should be up. Okay. Right. Okay, so let's go back to can you repeat why did we do the transformation? So the transformation this transformation there is because the actual data seems to be noisy with the points there, and in fact there is a line, and this line seems to be a smoothing of the actual data. Okay, so that's to consider the fact that there have been some treatment there to transform the actual data into something smooth. Right. So let's go back to the lecture. I will switch screen. Right. So last week we started to work on indirection, and a first example of interactive visualization. Is there a possibility to represent indirection? No, unfortunately. The only thing, yes, there is a possibility if I go back to the visual mapping, so the part there for the columns, we can use it as a transformation, remember? So here we have no transformation at all. So in what I do, I often omit those values, but that's to tell that that's identity there. So there is no transformation. And the only thing we can express in the table about the interaction is there. It's the fact that we have some interactors that do selection. So for and the interactors are listed in the paper. And for example, SL is there for slider. So for the title, there is an interactor, a slider there that can do some kind of selection. Right? Actor, actress, so we have sliders. And for example, for lens, we have BER for, I think it's a wounded range. So you have it's not a simple slider. You have, you can manipulate the two ends of the handle there to select a specific range of lens, right? So in the paper, there is a list of possible interactors, but obviously they couldn't envision all the possible interactions. So that's very basic. And that's mostly using interactors and not direct manipulation of the visualization. Okay, that's in an interaction with usually a control panel that you can act on, and you have some widgets, and that's the kind of widget that I use to do the selection in the dataset. So it's possible to represent interaction, but a very poor way, only from some simple interactions. Okay, that can do a selection. Yes, go on.
I took a look on the paper, and I did not find the specification of BR that it's specified in.
No, because it's. I don't remember if it's in the paper or not, so you didn't find it. It's because it's quite open, in fact, what you can put there. It's not that formal. They listed some interactors, but and BR, it's for bounded range, the fact that you can manipulate the two, both handles there of the samba in this scroll bar or slider. That's a slider with two sliders.
Yeah, I know, but if you look at ratings, it's the same operator BR, but it's different in the visualization.
Yeah, sure. For the ratings, you can select a subset. Yeah, sure. So that's a subset basically.
Okay.
And well, so that's to say that, and if we go back for example, last week we had a look at scatter dice, and if you look at this interactive visualization technique, obviously there's no way to represent the interaction in the scatter plot there, and to explain how it's linked to the main view there, so going from 2D to 3D and then back to 2D after a rotation, changing the perspective of the 3D visualization. That's sure that there's no way to describe that with the table, right? And that's why for the project, I asked you to describe the interaction with the words or with the images, what you envision as an interaction for your visualization, right? Because there is no simple way to encode that and to formalize interaction. And that's also why I'll show you examples of interactive visualization, just to show you how open this problem is. Right? So last week we had a look at scatter dice, so this visualization, I'm not sure we have seen all the features of the visualization. I think we just started to show how the transition between the two different scatter plots is done. And in fact, there are also other features. So here, you can prepare So you want to go from one scatterplot to another one. So there is some planning of the path there with different algorithms to find the best path in the scatterplot. And then there is an animation going from following this path to go from one point in the scatterplot to another point by jumping from square to squares. Okay. And then you can even draw a path on the scatterplot matrix, and it will follow the path that you have drawn on the scatterplot matrix. What is interesting, I encourage you to have a look at the video. So in the slides, there is a link to the website of ScatterDice, and in the paper, I will add it as a reading for next week. You will have to read the paper describing this visualization. And then while reading the paper, be sure to have a look at the video, and you will see that to do some evaluation of this visualization, they run a kind of scenario on that. So they ask people to, they provide them a data set and ask them to find, so it was a camera data set, and they ask them to find a specific model that would better suit their need. And this scenario is explained a bit further in the video. So here we have some examples of interaction where you can do some selection. So with the cursor, they do some selection. And then when you switch dimensions, the selection are still highlighted. So you can follow your selection in across the different dimensions. Right? Then there is what is called eccentric labeling to be able to explore the dataset even when there are a lot of items. So it's very difficult to select a single item in the visualization. So there, you have a square centered around the cursor, and on the edges of the square, you will have the names, so some details about the items that are captured inside the square. So that's called eccentric labeling. So that's not new from this visualization. It was invented before, but they reused that simple visualization. So there you have multiple items in the square, and you have the labels that are shown around the square. And you can choose the size of the lens. Here, what is shown there is the fact that you can reorder the rows and the column in the scatterplot matrix. So remember maybe the parallel coordinates. One thing interesting in the parallel coordinates, so remember when you have multiple dimensions, you can reuse the vertical axis to put the dimension onto them. And one of the limitations was the fact that then you can do comparisons only between two adjacent dimensions. And if you want to do a comparison between two dimensions that are not close together, one solution is to use interaction. So instead of having all the possibilities of proximity, then you multiplex them in time using interaction. And that's what is happening there. So if you want to compare, to switch from a MP attribute, to compare that with the acceleration attribute, you can put the two lines in the table close together. So you can reorder the matrix to have an order that's better suits your need, right? So there is an interaction for that. And then you can navigate quickly from this dimension to this dimension. Whereas before the reordering, you would have to go through hoops, through other dimensions to be able to jump from this one to this one. Okay, so then after in the video, there is a usage scenario. So that's what I told you earlier. With the data set of cameras, and you can see someone interacting using a touch screen. So I will let you have a look at this video and read the paper for in the readings for next week. Another example of interactive visualization. So this one is from a project I conducted a long time ago. And that's a visualization for hierarchical data. So we have a tree there. The usual representation for a tree. So let's first have a quick introduction onto that. So there will be lectures about trees and graphs. So I will be quick for now. But the idea is that usually with a hierarchical data, the usual representation, at least in computer science, is to have you have the root of the data, and then you have nodes. And you use what is called a node link representation. So the items are shown as nodes, and the relation between items, the fact that one item is a descendant of another item, is shown using links, right? But in fact, there are other ways to represent links, and one of them, so you may be not familiar, but you may already have seen this kind of visualization. The idea that if you have some space given, what you can do is to depict the hierarchy using geometrical inclusion. And for example, there, our root is a rectangle. And then we know that the root has two childs, and we can split the area of the root. So I will give B this part, and I will give A this part, right? And then recursively, you can do some layout. So you can put the children of B inside B. So that's E and F, right? And you can put the children of A inside A. So we have D and we have C, okay? And what is interesting there is that you can choose what size to give to the children, and it may not be equal. For example, I gave more space to A than B because in my case, A has more descendants than B, for example. Well, that's a way, but, and then we have C with two descendants there. And obviously there are many variations of this kind of representation because you can choose. So you can choose how you allocate the space. It can be it can depend on the number of childs, but it can also or the number of leaves. But it can also depend of some attribute. If in your tree, if you have some attributes, so let's say you have a file system, and then you have directories, and you have files at the leaves of the tree. If you have some attribute that you can add along the branch of the tree, so for example, the size, let's say you have a size of 10 for this one, 10 for this one, then you can compute an aggregation, like it will be 20 there. And Let's say we have 5 there and 5 there, it will be 10 there. For D, we have also 5, so it will be 15 there. So you can allocate the space proportionally to the number to an attribute that you can aggregate along the branch of the tree, right? And then you can decide also how to split. If you split, so here the first layer is split with a vertical separation, and then the next layer is split with an horizontal separation, and then the next layer is split with a vertical separation. So that's called slice and dice. So you can, at each level, you change the orientation of the separation. But you have many other ways to do, and there is a huge amount of papers exploring many variations for the layout, many variations for how you put a border. If you put a border, then you will lose some pixels. But if you don't put borders, then how do you see the difference between the nodes? So that's called tree maps. And it dates back. So the original paper on that is from the 80s. And that's again Ben Schneiderman, the author of this visualization. But in fact, we have some examples for that that did exist. So this kind of visualization has been known for a long time. What did Ben Schneiderman? He did he gave this visualization a name and proposed some algorithms to do it, and compared some different algorithms for the layout. And then, as I told you, there are a lot of papers exploring many variations on that. So what I wanted to show there, so my work, so that was later in the 80s, my work there was to have a look at how we can add some interaction, because in tree maps, in the classical tree maps, the interaction is quite basic. You can click on nodes, and then you will get a zoom view. So for example, if you click on the node A, you will get a zoomed version of the node A. So with only the child of A and a new layout computed. So if you click on A, you will have just a view for the sub tree there, but that's basically it. And most of the versions that you can find online are like that, even now. So the idea with zoomable tree maps was to transform tree maps into some more continuous structure, to provide continuous interaction onto a tree, which is basically something discrete. So we have something not continuous, and to see how we can have some continuous interaction into that. So there is a link to a movie there, but I will show you the program running. So on the if you follow this link, there is a web page, and the sources are available, and they can still compile, so that the original sources from 13 years ago, and you can still compile them, and you can still run the program. So let's have a look. Right, I hope you can see, maybe the animation will get sloppy through the presentation, but you can have a look at the video, and you can also get the sources and run it on your computer. So the idea, we have slices there, and the data set is a data set, an index of web pages. So it was called demos at that time. So it was before the rising of search engines on the internet. There were people maintaining some index of websites. So it sounds crazy now, but still it was the case at that time. And to organize a website, they put the website into a hierarchy of categories. And at the first level, we have 13 categories, like arts, business. Some of them are too small to have the labels on them, regional there, world there, okay? So that's the horizontal slices there. In this hierarchy, we have, I think that's something about 13 levels. So the deepest branch has 13 nodes along it. And we have more than 500 leaves in the tree. So that's more than 600 nodes in the tree. So that's not that big now, but at that time it was quite huge. And the interaction that you can perform is to you can click on some part of the graph, and then it will dig into that branch of the tree. So for example, if I click on two hearts there, then you will have some continuous zooming that goes from the view of the root to the rectangle where hearts live. Okay. And if I go back, so I hope the animation is not too sloppy. I can make the animation slower so that you can have a chance to see something. So there I go back, what you can see is that the rectangle was quite elongated there. So when you zoom into it, the zoom is not the same along the two axes. In fact, the zoom is made so that the target node is stretched to match the aspect ratio of the window. Okay, so I go back to art now. So now that we have more space for art, you can see that there are more details. And in fact, it's like, so now people are used to that. For example, if you go to Google Maps, when you zoom to a part of Google Maps, then you will have some details loading you are doing the zooming, you have more details. And that's the case there. If you go back, some details are disappearing to make the rendering fast enough. And also to hide the details that are not relevant because they are smaller than 1 pixel, for example. And also to keep the animation smooth. So if the animation, if the systems detect that the animation is not rendering at a fast enough pace, then it's cutting the level of details and restoring the level of details later when there is time to do the rendering. So if you go there, you have so we have arts, and now the categories are sliced the other way, and we can go, for example, to movies. And on the top right, not sure that you can see it well, but you have the path. So we are in arts, movies. And then we have slices, horizontal slices, and one of them is quite large, the titles. If I click there, we go into titles. And then we have slices in the other direction. So we have A, B, C, D. And in fact, the titles, the movie titles, are grouped by alphabetical order. So that's the structure of the data. You can use this visualization to load any other hierarchical data, and then you will have the structure guiding the interaction. And we can see, for example, in S movies, we have a large block there. Yeah, any ID, so each category there will be a movie. And if we go there into the S, we can see, okay, that's for the Star Wars movie. So the size of the rectangle is proportional to the number of web pages that are indexed into this classification. So most of the movies starting with S, along the movies starting with S, Star Wars were had a lot of web pages. Okay. Can you guess if we go into, for example, in the L column there, we have a large rectangle there. Any idea what this rectangle is? Any guess? Okay, let's have a look at the Lord of the Ring series. Okay. Yes, so some of you add it. What else in the M? Oh, there is a large rectangle there. Any idea? So you have to think of it. Yeah, matrix, exactly. You're good at it. So at that time, it was quite a big thing, matrix. Okay, so that's interesting, but that's not enough. So we can do left click to go down one level, right click to go up one level. We have gained some animation, but still we can do better than that. And for example, one of the ID, and that's why you can see we have some margins on the edges of the screen. Well, you can see the neighbors of the node there. And one of the ID was, how can we also navigate in the tree, not only going up and down in the tree as it's usual. And the idea is that you can click on the part that you can see on the border of the screen, and then it goes to the siblings of the node that you are looking at. Okay, so you can do some navigation in breadth rather than just in depth. So you can, like flipping pages of a book, you can go from one node to another. And then there are other interactions. For example, remember we were into arts, then into movies, so that's two clicks, then into titles, so that's three clicks, then into let's say M, that's four clicks, then we go into matrix using a five clicks. Okay, and in fact, if you try to follow, I'm not sure if you can, but if we go back, the rectangle of matrix is still visible there. And if you go back, okay, it's not that visible, but you can guess that somewhere here we have a rectangle for matrix. Okay, so the transition gives you some spatialization. You have abstract data, but still you can start to build a map of this data. So I know that, and I have practiced that a lot, I know that in this area we have the movies and we have the titles of the movies. This rectangle, I can recognize this rectangle as the movies titles, right? So if I go back there, what is unfortunate is that I can see this part, but I cannot access it directly. And what we have done then is to design an interaction that allows to access to that allows the user to have direct access to any part of the graph that he can of the tree that he can see. And for that, there is an interaction. Okay, that's not this. I have to remember which button I have to use. Okay, if I use the right, the middle button of my mouse, so it's easier if you have a touch screen, you can, instead of just clicking on the graph, you can draw a stroke on the visualization. And then the visualization, so I started a stroke and then draw the stroke, and I haven't released the button yet. Okay, so you can see the stroke on the graph in purple. And if I release now my button, my mouse button, then the visualization will zoom straight to the rectangle that has been selected by the stroke. So if I do another stroke there, it will go directly to matrix series. So using two strokes, I can go from the top of my data set to a specific subnode that is five levels inside the tree. Okay. And in fact, how this interaction works, when you start, so I will press the button, when you start a stroke, the algorithm selects the smallest node in the tree for which the rectangle enclosed fully the stroke. So for example, I started the stroke, and then it will go to a very small rectangle. And as long as I draw my stroke, the algorithm goes up into the hierarchy to find the smallest node enclosing the stroke that I am drawing, right? So as long as I'm into arts movie titles, that's the target of my stroke. But if I cross a border of arts movie titles, then the smallest node is a node upper in the above in the hierarchy, and then here it's arts, for example. So in fact, and that's interesting, we have a crossing-based interaction. So the selection of a specific node is made when I cross a border, then it selects the parent of the node that enclose the both nodes that are apart from the border that I'm just crossing. Oh, sorry, I was. So for example, I was doing this interaction there. I start my stroke, and then if I cross some borders, I will have the parent, I will get the parent selected. But I don't have to know how the interaction, how the algorithm is, the details of the algorithm. So I just draw a stroke to a specific node, and then it will zoom to that node. And what is interesting again there, it's the fact that, remember the borders that allowed me to flip between nodes. If I draw a stroke that goes from the current node to, so I leave the nodes and I go to the corner there, then my stroke is between the current node and another node, and the smallest node enclosing this stroke is up in the hierarchy. So with the same interaction, I can go also up in the hierarchy by doing a stroke that goes away from my specific node. So I can go down, one stroke to go there, one stroke to go to matrix, and I can go up in the hierarchy by just crossing the edges on the side of the visualization. Right. So, again, crossing-based interaction, I didn't invent crossing-based interaction. It was existing before. So that's a combination of an existing visualization with existing interaction, but all that combined together so that you can have a better access to it's easier to explore the visualization with those interactions. So there are other interaction, you can, for example, you can use the wheel of the mouse to zoom at some point. So if you choose a point and then you zoom, the visualization will choose if it should zoom horizontally and then vertically. And the idea is that depending on the node that is currently shown on the visualization, it will try to make it reach the same aspect ratio as the screen. So for example, now we are looking at the movie slice, and then the movie slice is zoomed horizontally, is stretched horizontally so that it fits the screen. And then if we go down further, now the title node is stretched vertically to fit the screen. And then since we have a vertical slice, the M and the L slices are stretched horizontally to reach the aspect ratio of the screen. So we have a zoom control, which is basically one dimension of control, because that's just the scale that we control with the mouse. And the interaction maps this scale onto two different variables, so the stretch, horizontal and vertical stretch, according to the structure of the data. So we have something continuous. I can also zoom and pan into the visualization as if the space was continuous. But this continuous interaction is guided by the discrete structure of the data. It's not just as if you were onto Google Earth with a continuous panning and zooming, because the panning and zooming is guided by the structure of the data. Okay, when you zoom in or out, the zoom snaps to the boundaries of the categories. Okay, so that was it for this demo. I will switch back to I'm not sure what you could follow. I hope it was visible on the video. If not, you can go see the movie. So there is a link there which is probably local, so you have to go into I will put the link onto the lecture homepage. In fact, the links are all everything that I show, the demo that I show, are available on the webpage of the lecture. There is a directory where the papers are available and the demo are available. And if you go there, you can go down and get the code and make it run on your computer if you are brave enough to compile some C++. Okay, so typically, that's an example where describing this interaction using some formalism would be very difficult, I think. So we have no other way than some text and some kind of description of the interaction, or some video to describe the interaction. But still, we have some principles. So for example, remember the mantra by Ben Schneiderman. So overview first, then zoom and filter, then details and demand. You can see that in this precise example, we really follow that. We have an overview with the whole tree, and then we can zoom. We cannot do some filtering, but we can zoom. And we can zoom until the leaves, so we can have all the information about all the items in our dataset. So we can follow some principles. And what is also interesting there is that there are no widgets for the interaction, so there are no sliders to change the scale. That's direct interaction. You go into the visualization and you manipulate the visualization. And the problem is when you code some visualization like that, in fact, there are basically no support into most of the toolkits that are proposed. So most of the toolkit to do visualization are good at you give some data and then they give you some visualization, but the interaction part is really something difficult because you have to consider all the small details, and that's not trivial at all. Even an interaction works when all the details are in a proper order. If you have something wrong, then it will be really difficult to use the interaction. So that's a very important part of that. And again, unfortunately, there's no recipe for that. We have only general principles for that. Maybe I will skip that one and let you have a look at the video by yourself. Let's have a look at this one. So this one is called Node Tricks. And what is interesting, some words. So what we have just shown in that for trees, we have many ways to visualize trees. Usually people think of trees as node links. They made for most of the people, having a tree and having the node link visualization of a tree is the same thing. But in fact, a tree is something abstract. It's a data structure with some topological properties. And the way you render it on screen, in fact, you have choices. And so you can use node links, but you can use tree maps, and there are an infinite varieties of ways to depict trees and to depict relation between the items. Okay. Maybe before going on to the next visualization, remember in the table by Card and McKinley, we have columns for the data attributes. So X, Y, D, the time and retinal properties. And then I skipped two columns, and one was like that and the other was like that. And then we have some control property for if you have some text. And the two columns there, in fact, are used to depict how links between items are encoded. And the dot there refers to node links. So when you have a hierarchy, so items are linked together using links, or this one refers to unclosing, the fact that you can show the hierarchical relation using unclosure. Okay, so that's for trees. And the next example is about graphs. And graphs, again, is something abstract. So you have a relationship between nodes and the difference with trees. So in information visualization, we tend to call that networks, because a graph also denotes some drawings. So networks is really the structure. You have items, and items are connected to other items. So the connection can be directed or undirected and so on. So you probably did some graph theory before. And again, as with with the trees, you have some node links representation, right? And we are used to that. But you can also depict relations between items other way. And one of the possibility, and in fact, people describe graphs also like that. The data structure often to describe graph is like that. You can use a matrix where you, so depending if it's ordered or not, you can have an order between lines and columns. And you can tell if nodes are connected together. For example, A and B are connected. So you will have this square telling you that you have a connection. And you can put some attribute and you can put some A and C are connected and A and D are connected, okay? So my matrix will be symmetrical and B is connected also to anyone else. And D is connected to anyone but C. So C is not connected to D and D is not connected to C. So we have a matrix like that. Okay, so we can represent graphs using matrices. That's not the only way, but we already have two ways to represent a graph. Okay, and they have different properties. We'll see that, but for example, using a matrix has a good property because the links won't overlap. So for node links, if you have a lot of nodes, the number of links can grow quadratically, obviously, and so you can have many crosses between links, and it can be very quickly unreadable. You don't have this problem with matrices because everything is flat, so every link is visible. You don't have so it's easy to see if two nodes are linked together. You just have to do a lookup in this matrix, right? So it has good properties. It has bad properties because the size of the matrix grows with the square of the number of the nodes, which is not the case for the graph. So you have to do some balance. There's no bulletproof solution to a graph visualization. And what is interesting there is that with the node tricks, they propose to get the best of both worlds. And to do that, I will show you, start the video. The idea is, I have to start at the beginning. So the idea there, that's what I want to do. Okay, so the idea there is that you start with a node link representation, and then you can select some part of the graph and transform only for this part of the graph. So for this subgraph, use the matrix visualization. Okay, and there is an animation that shows the matrix for that. And here you can see that, oh, we have all the connection. So that was a click, right? So if you are into a graph theory, when you have a subpart of a graph, and I go back to the node link. So in the node link visualization, we are not sure that every node in this group is linked to every other node, okay? We can speculate that maybe they are. So maybe we have a click. And that's a good thing with a matrix visualization. If you switch to a matrix visualization, then you will see that it was actually a click. Okay. Then they go on into selection of another part, and it's also a click. So you could argue that, okay, we could detect the clicks and use that automatically and use the visualization to have the visualization already doing that for us. But you know, what is interesting there is that we can use this tool to explore a data set without a priori knowledge and just to build our understanding of the data set while exploring it. And then there are interactions. So again, we have something discrete, a graph, and we have continuous interaction. So there you can drag and drop nodes from to go take a node from one matrix and put it onto another matrix, drag matrix to merge them, and so on. So I see that the time is running short, so I will have to stop for now. What I will do, I will add on the web page the links to the video so that you can have a look, and the links to the paper also as readings for next week. So this week you won't have to work on your project. So I will give you some papers to read. Right, that's it for today. Questions? Unless we add a directional graph, a semi-matrix would be good to spare some space, right? Yeah, sure, absolutely. And we'll see maybe next week this one. So that's the next example I want to show. We have a matrix which is symmetrical. So in this case, we'll see this example next week. But in this case, we have an alpha matrix, and even we can stretch it because the information is more dense along the diagonal. So we'll see that next week, but sure. But when the graph is directed, then the matrix is not symmetrical. So you will need both halves of the matrix. Sure. Okay. So by the end of the weekend, I will tell you the modalities for the defense of the project, for the next part of the project, and I will put the readings on the website. When that is ready, I send you an email to you all. So see you next week, I hope.
Bye, thank you.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, nice weekend.